Welcome to Liz Talks. I'm Liz, and I'm a nutritional therapy practitioner and best-selling author, but here I'm 0% professional and 100% mom, spouse, friend, and overanalyzer. We are going to talk food, beauty, family, fitness, mental health, friendship, marriage, and everything in between in this season of Liz Talks, and I'm so glad you're along for the ride. Remember, this is a podcast about thoughts, feelings, and opinions, and I definitely do not give individual, personal, or medical advice. This is episode 2 of Liz Talks. Topic: Liz Talks having another kid. Happy podcast day, friends. I'm so excited to be back with you today. As a reminder, in case you missed it, last week we talked about Liz in a nutshell, a very great big nutshell, my kids on the internet, pandemic impulse purchases, sending out the bat signal, and of course, my weekly overshare. A quick follow-up on the my kids on the internet portion. I talked in the last episode about why I don't put my kids' faces on the internet, about how I'm sort of inherently uncomfortable with the internet, and if my kids are anything like me, which so far it actually seems like they're not, so but if they are, maybe they'll feel the same in the future. So I feel like it's best to just leave that up to them. For now, this could change. I am always open to changing. But I also can't remember whether I said this, but generally, as far as their specific ages, which I've gotten some questions about, I'm kind of cagey about that too, on public and personal social media. I don't do birthday tributes or anything adorable like that, although I probably should because, again, my kids are adorable. I mostly stick to just labels that generally correspond to age, like my oldest is kindergarten age and my youngest is in the nipple biting stage or the discovering that if she yanks your shirt open and looks down the neck of your t-shirt, that's where the magic breasts are. So those are the stages that we're in, that kind of thing, which is actually a little bit funnier than just saying their ages anyway. Anyhow, today we're talking about having another kid, my baby number 2, the 5-year gap between my kids, and 3 things I learned from becoming a parent. On to the show. So let's talk having another kid, my baby number 2. So I recently wrote an article about this thing I did in 2020, which was having another child, and I thought I'd share a little bit of what that process was like personally and mentally and physically for me, along with a few things I learned in the process. There are a ton of different aspects to this, so this will just be the 101 survey course, but don't forget to check my website for my articles, most of which should appear by the time any given podcast airs, although there's no guarantees because but I try to keep up with it. I think I'm a lot better in print than I am in audio or podcast. So there should always be sort of a partner article on my website that corresponds with the podcast that I'm doing. So be sure to go check that out. There's just certain things that you can do with words that you can't do with audio. So be sure to check out realfoodliz.com. But in particular, for this particular podcast at realfoodliz.com, I want you to go there, and it will also possibly be up on my Instagram as well. But I want you to go see the screenshot of my husband's Oura Ring stats. The Oura Ring is like a bio tracker. It's a ring and you can wear it on your finger and it tracks your resting heart rate, things like that, just to give you some statistics so you can track how different things affect you, how your sleep affects your body, things like that. So my husband wears one, and his Oura Ring stats from the moment I told him we were pregnant with baby number 2, you just have to go see what the chart looks like. But the funny thing is, you know what I said to him? I didn't say, I'm pregnant, or we're having another baby. I said, we were just laying there in bed, and I go, so I got a positive pregnancy test, which in hindsight just sounds so awkward. And it's probably symptomatic of just my complete inability to share feelings or strong emotions with another human in my close orbit. I can only share facts. So bless my husband, truly, because I cannot be easy to deal with in that way. But before I get going with that, I want also to just make a note that I know that the, I'm doing air quotes right now, the decision to have another child is not a decision for everyone. And I certainly do not want to be triggering or cause any pain for folks who are struggling with growing their families. Please know I'm just sharing my experience, not meaning to apply this or suggest that this is some kind of universal experience. And if this is not a comfortable listen for you, that is okay. I promise there will be lots of episodes of Liz Talks that will be super fun where I don't talk about my reproductive organs. Okay, so let's talk about how we got there or the decision. For me, the will we, won't we was like a 5-year process that was honestly very confusing and strange for me and for us as a family. I feel like my head was telling me for a long time that we should probably be a one and done family. And what that should meant, I'm actually not sure. Maybe that I didn't think I could handle it. And just the fact of the existence of those doubts, that maybe it was a sign that we probably shouldn't have another. Or maybe I felt like the world is just too scary, so we probably should be one and done. I really don't know. I do know that whenever I would think about being one and done, my heart would always say, but, so the issue would just linger for me to come back to and go through the same process over and over again. And I don't know if anybody out there still remembers Sex and the City. I used to watch it, and now looking back, it's just so many things about that show were completely ridiculous. But I do remember this episode where Carrie was like on the end of one of her relationships, I think probably with Big, and was just sitting there just incessantly talking the same things over and over and over and over again to her friends. And at a certain point, they were like, you need to go to a therapist. And that was probably me just within my own head, where I was just going over and over and over these same things and almost getting some kind of gratification from going over and over these same things. And there was a certain point, which I will talk about, that I kind of was like, okay, you need to go figure this out. So anyway, I'm not even saying through all of this that my heart wanted another kid. Again, I said I am an emotionally stunted person who does not allow myself much room for feelings and gut instincts. I really just intellectualize everything. Everything is an argument about weighing data and things like that, but I still just couldn't let it go. And a side note to that, as much as I always resisted things like personality typing, it was actually eye-opening to do some of that, whether it was Gretchen Rubin's Four Tendencies or the Enneagram, both of which I was actually introduced to by Diane Sanfilippo on our podcast, the Balanced Bites podcast, which we had for 8 years. Because while I don't really hinge my entire personhood on the insight from these frameworks, which I think is really the key, it did give me some insight into why I think and behave certain ways, and that enabled me to detach from certain patterns and see and explore a broader set of possibilities for myself. And that has been really, really valuable. So I think one of the conclusions I reached doing this kind of early work was I wasn't going to really find peace in a decision until I trusted myself to come to the right decision, meaning I had to conquer some inner stressors that were impacting my life. And I convinced myself that because I struggled mightily with anxiousness and actually diagnosed anxiety and diagnosed depression and looping thoughts and panic attacks after my first was born, maybe I shouldn't or couldn't reproduce again until I was back to normal. Again, normal in air quotes. So between my first being born and when she was around 5 and started asking for a sibling, I did a lot of things to try to fix myself, more air quotes, which I suppose probably accounts for the 5-year gap between my kids, which has been interesting. And it's been interesting first because most of my friends had kids much closer together. And also because we were so far out of diapers and night wakings and such that it was very strange to be thrown back into that. Like, I mean, I was playing tennis while my first was at preschool. I was footloose and fancy free. And even beyond that, the parenting world changes so much every year, products in particular. So it was like I had never even been there before in some ways. That said, it was actually a cool opportunity to be fully detached from all the preconceived notions I had the first time around and just be open and look at things with fresh eyes. obviously my eyes are not fresh. They're tired and I'm tired, but you get what I mean. So one thing that has been so sweet about this larger gap between my kids is watching my first sort of, I use this word again, intellectualize sisterhood. Parts of it are instinctual for her, which is beautiful, but it's not like she's forgotten what life was like before baby. She remembers it and she misses it sometimes, and she can articulate that to me sometimes. There are other times where she just loses her marbles and we try to get to the root cause, but she has really adjusted beautifully. Even in the pandemic, homeschooling, perpetually together year we last had. And it's amazing to have her at an age where she's like reasonably self-sufficient, able to communicate, able to go knock on the neighbor's door and play for the afternoon rather than having to schedule a supervised play date. But I digress. So going back to all my attempts to fix myself in those 5 years between kids, I'm not saying that I actually needed to be fixed, and maybe that's what I actually learned in hindsight, but I will talk more about this journey in future podcasts, because damn if I didn't do some interesting stuff to figure myself out, from transcendental meditation to EMDR processing with a therapist, some medically supervised hallucinogen therapy, and just working really diligently to improve my lifestyle and coping mechanisms with things like expressive writing. And I'll go through all of this in a future podcast and post about kind of ranking those things in order of what was the most helpful, what was the most critical, what was the most expensive. Because this whole journey is so different for so many different people. But I think the common ground is oftentimes we feel like we can't afford to help ourselves in certain ways. And I have found that there are free, cheap, amazing ways to help oneself without having to go to a clinic or go to a therapist. Obviously, I advocate that for everyone, but if the gateway to this kind of self-help is going to be something you can do at home that feels manageable, that has really quick results, I want to share that. So I will do that hopefully in the next one or two podcasts. So anyway, all of this just so I could truly tell myself that I made a decision either way, being the healthiest and most mentally clear I could be. And isn't it so funny? And I don't know if anyone has been in this position before. I'm sure somebody out there has been in this position where people are asking you, when are you going to have another one? Oh, you guys need to have another one. And I just want to be like, so you want to sit down with me for the next 3 to 5 hours and talk about where I'm at? Because I would love to have that conversation with you. Anyhow, so what's funny, among many things that are funny, is my wonderful therapist at one point actually just told me I should do it. I should have another kid. And I was like, can you say that? But she knew me. She knew the situation. We had built a ton of trust with one another, and she was completely right. And what's interesting to me is this was all pre-pandemic. This was pre-2020. And even with everything that's happened since, I have been able to cope. And maybe this is because of all that work I did in between, or maybe it would have always been the case. I don't know. Sometimes when we live in that gap area where we just are so obsessed with the fact that we don't know, rather than just jumping in and trusting that we can adapt, which is probably what I needed to do in the first place. But all that said, I still wondered how I could ever make room in my heart for another kid. And I still don't know how it's possible. There was this process sort of emerging from all of that deer in headlights and chaos right after my second was born, to realizing that there was just a place for her that was always hers. And that's still in progress. The realization wasn't instantaneous. Like right after giving birth, I was actually totally spent, glassy-eyed. And my friend Jamie, who's the kind of friend who makes total sense in a room that's filled with placenta, she's the kind of friend who I'd have stop by seconds after giving birth. She says, I was basically on drugs, and I was not, because I had a home birth, which I'll also talk about on the podcast. But I knew what she meant. And for the first 6 weeks, I was sort of just terrified of like nighttime coming and questioning all of our choices. But the dust settled, and now we have this second child who has never questioned her belonging, which means I certainly have no reason to question it. So I wonder at times, maybe it's more of like a loaves and fishes scenario where whatever love you need is what becomes available to you. So at the very least, I am grateful for that. But one theme to some of my struggles as a parent that I feel like I can articulate now is that my experience doesn't always seem to match up with what I see and hear about. So I wanted to write and speak to that through my channels, because when I'm not in the throes of a panic about fill in the blank, and these panics still happened, even though I said that I'm much calmer and much more able to cope, they still happened and they still happen. But when I'm not in the depths of that, I truly do intellectually and spiritually grasp one of the first lessons that I want to share from kid number two, that everyone's experience in parenting and as a parent is different. And that's hard in a culture that values sameness and frameworks and best practices, and sometimes even browbeating people into conformity. It's really hard, but it's okay. And this is by no means my only example of this, but here's one. My experience with birth, particularly home birth, was not necessarily this empowering mama lion thing. I was lying there like a glassy-eyed fish right after birth. I was not feeling that OMG my baby moment like you see in the birth videos or from those like goddess-like birthing influencers at all. And I had felt like I was supposed to feel that way because I was birthing in this really biologically appropriate way. I have a video of it, and I honestly hate the video. It's the honest truth. And guess what? That's okay. Not feeling those first like shining moments and even struggling through the first 6 minutes or 6 weeks or even 6 years, or feeling like you're going through the motions or like you're on a long walk across the coals, or that the entire experience is just beyond grueling, or that you're completely out of control, or that you're in like a perpetual tectonic vortex, just feeling off or different or alone, or like you're possibly wrong about some really, really important things. None of that makes you less suited for parenthood. It means that this particular experience of parenthood is uniquely yours, and that however it cracks you open might actually be the way you learn that you're more capable than you ever thought possible. And that's just the experience of experiencing. That might mean getting help, which I did in several different forms after my first. It might mean saying you can't do it and figuring it out from rock bottom. It might mean making decisions you never thought you'd make so you can survive. Something in this will shape you in the way you need to be shaped if you literally let go of any preconceived notions you had about any of the above. Getting help, deciding to sleep train so you don't wreck your car on the way to daycare drop off, what have you. And actually, yes, I will have a podcast one day about sleep training, and I promise it won't be what you think. So this is a bit of what I wrote about on the blog, this idea that you might look around you and feel that you're the only one making certain decisions or feeling a certain way about whatever it is, fill in the blank. And while it's unlikely that you're truly alone in this world, it sure might feel like it. And to take some of that wrongness away from that feeling, and I'm an Enneagram 6, so some of you out there might not have any clue what I'm talking about, but to take some of the wrongness away from the feeling, just remember, though it's unlikely that you are really alone on your island, it's actually okay to be the only one. And I will bring this back, as I often do, with a dated pop culture reference. But as Michael Scott from The Office would say, society sucks. I don't even consider myself a part of society. And what I'm saying with all this is, it's okay to have a completely different parenting experience from your friends or family. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you, and in a lot of cases, it means you're thinking deeply and truly feeling the weight of your responsibilities, and more people should be like that. So this is not easy in a society that, again, values sameness and conformity, that sometimes seeks to shame parents into sameness and conformity. But you can handle it. I think the only requirement is that you give other parents, maybe parents that you don't get or understand, and not just like light, oh, weird that they use a stroller when I prefer a baby carrier, that type of stuff. Not that. I mean the really meaty stuff, the stuff that you believe with all your heart is wrong. You have to extend them the same grace that you're learning to give yourself. And in fact, that's a good practice. Sometimes it's easier to extend grace to others than to give it to yourself. So maybe start with the easy stuff and work your way up to the harder stuff. And again, in podcast number one and in this one, I want to remind you that I never want to be soapboxy. Oftentimes, if I'm saying, you need to do X, Y, and Z, I'm actually talking to myself. I'm not trying to give advice to people about things that I have no business giving advice about. In most of these spaces, I'm actually talking, reflecting the advice, the talks that I had with myself. So just so you know. And I think I've just learned, parenthood just cracks you open in ways you never expected and never knew you needed. And it forces you to transform. And oftentimes that is painful. And oftentimes you resist until you realize it might just be less prolonged agony to just submit to it. And I don't know that I wanted to hear any of that before I had kids. But now that I'm in that club, there it is. And listen, nobody would do it if these little muffins were not literally the most delicious, darling things on the planet, because they are. And this might be really silly, but I have this line from the Rolling Stones song that I often repeat to myself, and it's just, you get what you need. I really feel like there are circumstances where we need to trust that we might not be getting what we expect or what we want or what we saw happening or what we intellectualize as the next logical step in the progression of life, but we are getting what we need. And I think that just about covers it. The other two lessons, which I talk about on the website, are really simple, and I think they're inherent sort of to what I've already talked about here. The second lesson is that becoming a parent is a process. It's not an instantaneous shift. And the third is that you have to learn to trust yourself. The latter, I think we already covered. With regards to the former, if you're like me and you didn't feel some magical transition into parentness, you're not alone. So my solution there is try to notice the little things, the day-to-day things that are parent things. Did you just know that your baby had something dangerous in her mouth? Did you remember the extra lovey for the long car ride? Did you anticipate a need before it even popped up? Did you get out of bed this morning and feed your child? Then you, my friend, are a parent. And I encourage you to bear witness to those wins, because those comprise parenthood. Parenthood isn't a feeling or something you ascend to after birthing a baby. It's the sum total of those little everyday actions that you take, even when you feel like you're clueless and unqualified and flying blind. And also, if you did have that instantaneous shift feeling, that is freaking awesome. And I am fully in awe of you. No jealousy, just respect and admiration. We are all coming at this from different angles, and that is worthy of respect. It's time for my weekly overshare. This is when, if kids are around, you might want to pop in the earbuds. Ready? Talking about our journey to having a second kid got me thinking about something called birth control, and not like the synthetic hormones in pill form. We've got enough information floating around about the potential issues with that, but something called natural family planning, NFP, which is an idea I love. It's basically the act of tracking your cycle with indicators like waking body temperature and cervical fluid, and using those signs to track when your fertile window is, in order to either one, get pregnant, or two, avoid unprotected sex during that window and thereby prevent pregnancy. But one thing I do not love about it is hearing from people who are not just not wanting to use protection at all, so they just skip the bump and grind during their fertile window altogether. And yes, I know right now using euphemisms to describe genitalia and sex is like not considered appropriate. I want everybody to know that we use appropriate anatomical terms in my household, but I actually think it's fun and crafty and an entertaining use of language to pop in little euphemisms and whatnot. So we're all adults. We can enjoy this. I think it's fine. So it makes me kind of bummed when folks skip bump and uglies altogether because they don't want to use protection at all. So this wouldn't be the first time I was totally outside the consensus, but the fertile window is when my body wants to rendezvous the most. So skipping that altogether because one doesn't like the feel of condoms most frequently is such a bummer to me. There are tons of brands of condoms out there that even people that are obsessed with like non-toxic living can enjoy. You aren't stuck with what they've got at Walgreens. By the way, again, pun intended, see what I did there? You aren't stuck. Ha ha, ha ha. And on top of that, Again, see what I did there? On top of that, I've noticed a trend on Instagram of talking about things like exercising with the rhythm of your menstrual cycle. And that's cool. I had a conversation with a friend the other day about eating with the rhythm of your menstrual cycle. But what about having sex in rhythm with your menstrual cycle? I feel like too many of us are ignoring the fact that our bodies don't want sex at certain points in our cycle, which are often the times in natural family planning that you're encouraged to have sex. And we think we're supposed to be these like foxy sex vixens, or like, let's be honest, want intimacy at all, even during the points in our cycle where certain hormones and natural lube is low. So of course, there are products to make intimacy more comfortable when our bodies are outside of that window. There are lots of things that you can do, but at the same time, it is our right and privilege to follow our body's horny cues. End of overshare. Okay, before we close, please join me, message me, communicate with me. Email is best. Join my email crew by going to liztalks.com. You'll be forwarded to the page to drop your email address in. It's easy peasy. And you can always reply to any of my emails or join me on Instagram at realfoodliz. That's it for episode 2. Stick with me as we talk food, beauty, families, babies, birth, exercise, friendship, marriage, and life. Thanks for listening, friends.